Welcome to Louisiana Considered. I'm Adam Voss. Just ahead today, we'll talk about economic development and a recent international study comparing downtowns. Also, a look at more than a decade of arts leadership as Baton Rouge's Renee Chatelain steps down from the top of the Arts Council of Greater Baton Rouge. But first, in St. Bernard Parish, after years of decline, volunteers started to restore part of Bayou Bienvenue's marsh. And the project relies on an unlikely hero, glass bottles. Hallie Parker from the Coastal Desk reports.
A mix of staff and volunteers shovels soft sand into wagons on the edge of Bayou Bienvenue. But not just any sand. It's sand recycled from glass.
We're taking trash, we're turning it into sediment that can breed life and hopefully bring some cypress back to this swamp.
Francisca Troutman is the co-founder of Glass Half Full, the only glass recycling facility in Louisiana. She's standing in front of dozens of giant sacks of glass sand. The surrounding marsh is dotted with the remains of dead cypress trees, turned into an illegal dump. Workers from Glass Half Full and Tulane University build a makeshift pier. Soon, the crew will build up a pair of new islands in the bayou, made with river sand and recycled glass. Fuzzy logs of coconut husks will keep the sand in place. Tulane professor Julie Albert says they hope the islands will help grow the marsh.
We plan to plant those with bald cypress trees and local marsh grasses.
Albert says you can't just toss any glass into the marsh.
You do have to know something about glass types and what you're crushing and how you're crushing it.
Glass Half Full pulverizes glass bottles, like beer and wine, into tiny grains of sand safe for wildlife. A $5 million Tulane study found the glass sand blends with the environment. Troutman came up with the idea over a bottle of wine herself.
We give people guilt-free drinking, a reason to crack open another one, because you're contributing to coastal restoration here in Louisiana.
So. People across New Orleans, Baton Rouge, and the North Shore can drop off glass for free at Glass Half Full's facility or pay for residential pickup. In St. Bernard Parish, I'm Hallie Parker.
From WRKF and WWNO, this is Louisiana Considered. I'm Adam Voss. It's time to talk about economic development. A study by the International Downtown Association last month released a report comparing Baton Rouge with similar cities with similar downtowns. It tells us Baton Rouge's downtown saw 7% growth compared to 5 years ago, while other cities saw a single percent decline in their downtowns over the same period. To go over the rest of the data and to tell us what this data says about the health of the heart of our city, we have with us Whitney Hoffman-Sayall, Executive Director of Baton Rouge's Downtown Development District. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you for having me here.
So you're comparing similar cities roughly similar to Baton Rouge in certain economic development metrics. And what we're not looking at is comparing Baton Rouge to larger or higher profile cities like New Orleans, if I'm not mistaken. What economic development challenges are cities like Baton Rouge facing right now?
Yeah, so the study did focus in on different downtowns, right? And so there's business improvement districts and downtown development districts, and the study really focuses on looking at the downtown cores of these different cities. We all have similar issues we're struggling with right now. There's one, the decline in workforce, right? So we are living in an age of remote working, and that's a reality. Some downtowns are doing better than others in terms of that. But if you think about what that means for a downtown, these concentrated areas of employment centers, if you're decreasing the amount of employees that are coming down on a daily basis, like that impacts the businesses that service those workers, right? And everything is interrelated. So then that could potentially cause some issues with your resident and your visitor population, right? Because the businesses attract people to want to live there and visit there. So it's all really tied in together.
Hmm. It's probably hard to boil this down into one flat figure like I did when I introduced you. But tell us, where is Baton Rouge's downtown area excelling? Where is it pulling ahead of the competition?
Yeah, so in our residential population, first and foremost, I would say, you know, we've seen a significant growth over the last 10 years. We're outpacing the city's growth. We've also seen an increase in our visitors. So if you look at our hotel occupancy rates, they outpace what goes on in the parish. I'd say the other thing we're doing really well on is actually kind of the remote working. Now, we've seen a decline, obviously, and we've had businesses report lower lunch crowds and things of that sort. But comparatively to other downtowns, I mean, there are other downtowns that have really suffered in that regard. I think one of the reasons why we've had a little bit of a buffer from that impact is the fact that we were converting office buildings to residential buildings prior to the pandemic. And that was something, obviously, we didn't anticipate that happening. But we were already ahead of the game in that regard. And a lot of that had to do with the state and federal historic tax credits that were available, really helped catalyze moving over some of those office spaces to residential units like the Commerce Building, the 440, and the most recent Rivermark Center. Right. So that was a huge tower, one of two towers, the previous Chase Towers downtown, and an entire tower has been converted from office to residential.
Yeah, tell me about residential. How many people are living downtown now?
So we have a little over 10,000, which has seen, I think, like a 20% increase in the last 10 years. If you think about what's happened in the last 10 years and the apartment complexes that were brought downtown, you know, we didn't really used to have some residential, right? Like maybe a loft apartment or two, but we didn't have these great multi-use buildings with residential and retail on the bottom.
Are we looking at increasing that? Are there any efforts?
There's always efforts to increase residential. So we are really excited. The developers of the Heron downtown. So that's a really great residential one that came online, I believe, in 2018, 2019. And they are doing another building, another apartment building right next to the existing facility. So it should bring us 200 or more additional residential units downtown.
So you told me about the fact fewer people are working in downtowns, and if they're working from home, what better place to replace them with than people living downtown? Is that a strategy a lot of downtowns are pursuing, and do you see it as a successful one, one that has a lot of future?
Absolutely. I think even nationally, if you look at trends, we have a shortage of housing, particularly in the affordability markets, right? I'll actually be traveling to Washington, D.C. in a couple weeks to help advocate for bills that would help incentivize converting office into residential across the country.
And now tell us what we're learning about what Baton Rouge could be doing better at. What are the metrics saying Baton Rouge could use some improvement in?
So I think we could do better in terms of making sure that we really catalyze on our residential development, right? And then the question always is, how do you get more people interested in living downtown? And that's really quality of life factors, right? That's one thing I think we also did really well. I'd tip our hat to Davis Rohr, my predecessor, who really helped push our office in getting these green spaces online, right? A lot of other downtowns don't have the green spaces that we have. We have a very large 11 acres of green space. Those are things people want to be nearby, right? You want to, if you're going to live in an apartment building, you want access to good green space where you can walk your dog or take your kids. But I think that we can do more of that, right? We really need to focus on our riverfront. That's our biggest asset, right? And that's not just for residents, but also our visitors. There is a 13.1-mile levee trail up on the riverfront, but what does the area around it look like? Could there be nodes, you know, off of that very long path where you could stop and have a cup of coffee, those sort of things? I think really, really focusing on improving quality of life, even though we've made a lot of progress. I think the other piece is, you can see in the report, is we are not performing as well as our counterparts in terms of retail. But the fact that we are in line with them and other trends, such as the visitor and residential growth, I think that shows that we have an incredible amount of potential for retail. It's just not a whole lot of tapping of it yet, right? And we know that we have a lot of visitors occupying those hotels with the hotel rates. Same with the residents, right? So we are so grateful to have Mathurne's downtown. It's a full-service grocery store. I think it is a big reason why it helped us push the residential development, because people love the idea of walking and getting a gallon of milk and then going home, right? But what are some other opportunities? Like, could we get a 24-hour or long-hour pharmacy where you can get your hair tie or your brush or your toothpaste? It validates a lot of what we are doing in terms of our partnership with the Baton Rouge Area Chamber and trying to attract new businesses. I would think the other thing to point out on the report and doing better is, I think most urban planners and maybe most people know that interstates really divided our communities, right? So when you look at some of the demographic trends and the data in this report, you can see very stark differences between the west and the east side of the interstate. We just opened a project, Louisiana Avenue Connector, that connects the Government Street bike lanes to the downtown Greenway. So that was one of those pieces where we're trying to bridge those gaps. Just kicked off talking about how we light up maybe artistic lighting in those areas underneath the interstate to help make that a more pleasurable experience to pass, right? Daytime and nighttime.
Yeah, kind of the asset of the fact that our interstates are almost completely raised is that you can walk under them where there are a lot of downtowns where they are completely cut off. Yeah.
Yeah, no, correct. It still creates a perception barrier, though, right? I mean, it is a very monolithic structure that is somewhat intimidating, and it doesn't feel like something that you want to pass. And so we need to do some design interventions to make that experience a little bit better.
This is Louisiana Considered. We're talking about the latest international economic development data comparing Baton Rouge with other cities. We're talking about it with Whitney Hoffman-Sayall with the Downtown Development District in Baton Rouge. What logic is there behind comparing downtown districts, specifically downtowns, and not the city overall or the metropolitan area overall? What insight do you get from looking specifically at downtowns?
Yeah, I think different comparisons give different results, right? There's several aspects in this report that also compare our downtown area to the city. I think in particular, looking at downtowns, us and other downtowns that are categorized as emerging, gives us some insight in making sure that we're, one, sort of meeting some baselines, right? And then identifying where we're doing well and where we can do better. I think the reason why we look at other downtowns specifically is we're very unique. So we are not a typical residential neighborhood, and we are not a typical strip mall. All of those things are kind of separated or in their own little pods. We're downtown, it's all together. So we have residents on top of retail. We've got businesses, maybe part of the same complex. We've got entertainment venues. We've got museums. We have all of our cultural assets. We have our government workings. And that's not always the case in all downtowns, but you have all of the visitor, worker, and the resident in the same geographic location, functioning together in an area that is our oldest part of the city, that has our history, our culture. If you visit another city, where do you typically go? If you're going to another city to explore what that city has to offer, you're going to the downtown area.
And finally, what action do you suggest? What action are you looking at to address those places where Baton Rouge could use some work? What's afoot? What do you have planned?
So as I mentioned, we had that partnership with the Baton Rouge Area Chamber, but I think we need to have serious conversations with our different stakeholder groups in that regard, like our property owners, real estate agents, some developers. You know, I think oftentimes also because we are so unique, sometimes we don't fit the mold of what particular retail establishments might be looking for. For instance, like if a corporate organization said, well, we need this many square feet and we need 20 parking spaces right out the front door. Well, that's very difficult for downtown to make that metric work, right? But we see it happening in other cities, and I think that that's because they make it work, right? You got to sit down, you got to have a discussion, and okay, oh, say, this is what you say you need, but we can't really provide this, but we know that this would be beneficial for our stakeholders and it would be beneficial for your business to have a location here. So let's hash out the details and think about what needs to happen to get you to locate here. We saw that happen with Matherne's. You know, we did a market study that said we did not have enough rooftops to attract a grocery store downtown because that's their metric, right? But downtown isn't a neighborhood, and we didn't have the residents. And then it was also the chicken and the egg, right? Like, we need the grocery store to get more residents to come here. So we were really fortunate in the fact that Matherne's, a local grocery store, we sat down and we talked to them, and we had the conversation about how this grocery store model could be a little bit different than what you see in a neighborhood. So it's just making the model for the retail or what it is we want to attract downtown fit what works downtown.
Whitney Hoffman-Sayall is Executive Director of Baton Rouge's Downtown Development District. Thank you for your time today.
Yeah, thank you.
This is Louisiana Considered. I'm Adam Voss. Renee Chatelaine, earlier this year, exited as president and CEO of the Arts Council of Greater Baton Rouge. Renee was in that role for 8 years and has several more years of experience promoting arts and culture in Baton Rouge. To take a look back at the obstacles overcome advocating for the arts in the capital city and the victories of enriching the arts and cultural scene here and look forward to what the future holds, Renee joins us in the studio. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
So just to kick us off, what are a couple of key words, overarching thoughts on your mind after managing arts and culture in the capital city over the years?
I think surely gratitude. What a unique perspective on the world to be able to see it through an arts lens. The arts is pervasive, right? It's in every aspect of our lives. So to be in leadership in that sector means that you can use that lens to touch people in every walk of life. And I think that's sort of a privilege that I'm really grateful that I had.
Looking back at your time, what are some of the challenges? What are some of your victories in promoting the arts scene in Baton Rouge, not just in the Arts Council, but your previous position at the Manship Theater?
I think, I'm born in Baton Rouge, and so my whole life has been around and about the arts. But particularly, I think when we're talking about the Arts Council in those years just preceding that at Manship Theater, it was seeing challenges and using the arts to combat those challenges, taking them head on. I mean, certainly at the Manship Theater, it was about opening up the Shaw Center for the Arts, where the Manship Theater is housed, to the larger community to make it an accessible and welcoming space, and to do that through a diverse array of programming, both touring professional programs as well as local nonprofit arts organizations, to celebrate all that in a physical space is really so remarkable, and it was a privilege to do that. The Arts Council, certainly, we had the challenge soon after I was hired of addressing the 2016 flood event, and that certainly changed the trajectory of the Arts Council and its role in a community and the vitalness of the arts in that situation. But then, that program that we had with Creative Relief, as we called it, became nationally recognized. And since then, we've had a lens of emergency response and rebuilding and mitigation with the arts in our community at large. So that's been a real victory, too.
Yeah, refresh us on that program, Creative Relief. That was a moment when the Arts Council intersected with the livelihoods of artists. And you mentioned Baton Rouge was able to make that a model that others could follow.
Absolutely. It was twofold. What we found, when we had this flood event was that we had a huge amount of displacement. I'm sure listeners throughout the region can relate to that. And so one was, how do we preserve our culture? How do we keep our artists here when they've been displaced and may find another place to permanently reside? And then we lose our cultural footprint. So that was certainly a concern. We want our artists to be able to live and work here. And then the artists that were here also wanted to help. And so how do we address immediate issues and then later on issues, that may be emotionally tied to an experience like that through the arts? And so we were able to develop programming both to have artists helping others and then for us to help artists and preserve that cultural footprint.
Yes, the flood of 2016 probably had echoes of Katrina for many people with connections to New Orleans, especially the potential exodus of artists, of creators that your city's culture might suffer if the artists don't see themselves sticking around after experiencing such a big community trauma.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, we also had some of the social unrest associated with the shooting of Alton Sterling and then subsequent events that happened. And art was used to address those issues, too. And so we found ourselves really working not just in gallery settings, not just in arts educational settings in the traditional classroom sense to address, have people emote and express and advocate by using arts as a medium to do so.
Yeah. Tell me about art not just being a medium for itself, for art and aesthetics, but also a medium for talking about community issues, public affairs, talking about where you live.
Absolutely. And sometimes that gives voice where other avenues have not. And so we find that very fulfilling. It's challenging. You want to make sure that everybody has access and that there's equity in that process. but it's very important. And so my role as a leader of the Arts Council during that tenure was to recognize the great responsibility that we had, and then to make sure that others in our community saw that great responsibility and joined us.
We're speaking with Renee Chatelaine, former president and CEO of the Arts Council of Greater Baton Rouge. She recently exited her role at the organization after 8 years of arts leadership at the Arts Council, an additional 5 years before that at the Manship Theater in downtown Baton Rouge. People might not realize the breadth of what the regional arts councils in Louisiana play a role in. It's not just visual art or galleries, like you said, or music performances. We're talking about more. Familiarize us a little bit, if you would, about the full extent of what the Arts Council does.
I mean, I hope you have a really long time for this interview. There's real estate development. So health and wellness, real estate development, education in the traditional and non-traditional senses, addressing, we call it creative aging, and allowing people 50 and better who can change careers at that moment, access to the creative arts, if that's the vocation that at that moment in their lives they're choosing. It goes even in arts and health. There's an initiative using the arts as a medium, even in the physical movement, whether it's dance, it's theater, these health initiatives associated with the arts. The arts have been around forever and ever. It's just people are starting to recognize and quantify through data what the benefits are, as well as our gallery and aesthetics and quality of life.
What work do you see as not being done yet? What hurdles do you see Baton Rouge facing in the future in promoting the arts and supporting a vibrant arts scene?
Well, I hope that there is a more intentional effort to invest in the arts and in the arts community in the same way that you may invest in education, in job opportunities and training, because all of it's so interwoven. And I think when you see across the board cities who have made an intentional investment in the arts and in cultivating that those are the cities you want to visit. Those are the cities you want to live in. They have appeal. And it's because it all sources from that center of the creative culture. And so we need to recognize that and be more intentional about it. From our K-12 schools should have sequential arts programming, every child in the district, so that kids can be exposed to it. Whether or not they become artists, it does so much more for them.
You might say that art is not just for the artists.
Correct. And we like to say everyone is an artist. And certainly I think that is very true. And just recognizing your creative energy and what you can do and how that impacts others as well as yourself, I think is super important. So in 10 years, I hope that there's an intentional effort made to support and recognize that community.
Renee Chatelaine is celebrating 8 years at the Arts Council of Greater Baton Rouge as she recently exited her role there. Thank you for her time today.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much.
That's Louisiana Considered on a Wednesday. A thank you to Hallie Parker from the Coastal Desk reporting from Bayou Bienvenue in St. Bernard Parish. Also to Whitney Hoffman-Sayall from Baton Rouge's Downtown Development District and Renee Chatelaine, formerly of the Arts Council of Greater Baton Rouge. Our managing producer is Lana Schreiber. Our contributing producers are Matt Bloom and myself, Adam Voss. We receive production and technical support from Garrett Pittman and our assistant producer, Aubrey Purcell. You can listen to Louisiana Considered on the station weekdays at 12 noon and 7 p.m. It's available on Spotify, Google Play, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Adam Voss. Thanks for listening.
Major support for Louisiana Considered provided by Rouse's Markets, a Louisiana shopping experience, with additional support from Tulane School of Public Health.